Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
Morning, it's your host, Dr. Terry Mason. The show with Dr. House, heard every Sunday right here on AM 1690 WBON, the Talk of Chicago. We got a great show for you again. This is the University of Illinois Cancer Center Sunday. And we've got our two guests from the University of Illinois, in addition to Farmer Tony. I'm going to call him the anointed Farmer Tony and Dr. Britt. So what we'll do before we get into Dr. David, I want to make sure I say your name properly. Could you say it for me? Dr. David?
Oh, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Dr. Anyadike.
Anyadike?
Yes.
Okay, I want to say that properly. And Dr. Peterson, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm well, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, we're going to have a great show. We're going to get into the issue of vaccination and what have you in just a moment. So if somebody has a question about childhood vaccinations, particularly as we're now talking about vaccinations for COVID and other things in children, as well as the regular vaccines, make sure they tune in because we've got a lot to talk about this morning. Before we do that, we'll do our very brief COVID report and our farm report. Dr. Britt, go right ahead.
Well, actually, when I found out that we have people from UIC, my alma mater, talking about vaccines, because my biggest issue was vaccines. And so I actually have a few questions. So we'll be able to get into those questions once we start that part. So if you want to go to Tony for a farm report, that'll be just fine.
All right, Tony, good morning. How are you this morning, Mr. Williamson?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Well, Tony, give us an update on what's happening out at the farm. I mean, and for those of us, those who don't know, Mother Carr's farm is out located at the on the property of the Church of God. I'm sorry. Vernon Park Church of God on 1975 East Jill Orr Road. And we're going to be having a special event coming up on the 9th. Is that right, Tony?
Yes. They were actually out here working today trying to prepare the campus and keep everything watered so we can stay on schedule with the distribution. July the 9th from 11 o'clock to 2, we're having an open house. Anybody who would like to, learn more about the farm and get more inquiry, more information, should be out there that day. We're going to have a great time. The campus should be looking nice. The festival will be coming in. We did this 2 weeks ago, and it kind of rained that day, and we didn't really get the word out. And so we're pushing this a little bit harder this time.
And it's free. You just come on out. It's free. There's no charge. And you'll get a chance to see. Tony, just could you just give us a brief rundown of the things that have been planted and are coming up out there?
Yeah. Well, we pretty much got everything in. There's corn out here, string beans, watermelons, tomatoes, bell peppers. We have two or three different types of peppers and nice variety of different tomatoes, basil, rosemary. So everything, and that's just a fraction. We keep planting because we're expecting, you know, the masses to join in and participate in this, because this is in our community. It helps to support our community and make sure in a time of insecure times that we have food. Yes.
Well, you know, I really want to thank you and the team, and my condolences to the mother of one of our team members who passed recently out there, but is out there today, actually, working, trying to get some things done. So I appreciate that. And
Dr. Mason?
Yes, sir.
Before we go to UIC, if I may, we had about six people who sent their fee for the membership by Zelle. Six people sent their membership a fee by Zelle, but I do not have access to the membership application. So you need to send the membership application. Let me go through it as quick as I possibly can. Send it to HPI Chicago, 4601 South Cottage Grove Avenue, P.O. Box 53426 at Chicago 60653. One more time. HPI Chicago, 4601 South Cottage Grove Avenue, P.O. Box 53426, Chicago 60653. This is for those persons who sent their fee by Zelle, but I do not have their membership application, so I don't really know how to contact you other than through this mechanism. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, let's go on. We're going to go straight to Dr. David. Say that again for me, Dr. David.
Any DK. You can call me Dr. David.
Dr. David, yes, sir. Well, Dr. David, you are you're a pediatrician, and you, like Dr. Britt and myself, we were trained at the University of Illinois and worked as residents at the University of Illinois. So it's really been interesting to have other colleagues that have worked through the system. And actually, at that time, Illinois Masonic was part of the University of Illinois training program. But we're going to be talking about vaccines, and there's a lot of discussion now about the vaccines for the children, particularly now the new vaccine for COVID. Can you give us an update on where you are, where we are with vaccines, and your recommendations as a pediatrician to parents regarding getting the appropriate vaccines?
All vaccines are with COVID in general?
All the vaccines, but specifically the COVID one.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. I'm excited to be part of your work in the community. Definitely as pediatricians, one of the biggest things that we've seen that's changed pediatrics, that's changed medicine over the last 20 years has been the vaccines. I always point out to especially the grandparents just that how much has changed over the last 20 years. So, for example, for grandparents, even people my age, everybody got chickenpox. Everybody did. Nowadays, you know, as part of vaccination, nobody gets chickenpox anymore. That's one of the many infections that we just don't see anymore. Some of the adults that we see, some of the parents, we talk to them, they remember meningitis when schools used to be shut down all the time for meningitis. They would have to do deep cleanings, et cetera, and the high schools would be closed for 3 days, and we don't see that anymore. So these are just examples of just how vaccines have changed the game. We do want to make sure that now that, you know, lockdown is over, that people are getting the vaccines that they need, because a lot of people were waiting to give the shots they needed because they didn't want to leave the house or see the doctor. So we do want to make sure that people do get caught up with their shots because they are providing protection against the large number of bacteria and viruses that, you know, are protecting all of us. In addition, with the new COVID vaccine, it is now recommended down to age 6 months. We are seeing kids getting sick from COVID. So I know people like to downplay COVID now that, you know, people aren't scared of COVID like they used to, which is great. You shouldn't be scared of it. You should just be cautious and, you know, take the proper precautions. And one of the proper precautions is to make sure you're vaccinated. I'll often tell my patients, with now over 13 billion vaccines haven't been given, 13 billion COVID vaccines haven't been given so far. If the vaccine was causing a lot of side effects, we would all have heard about it. So I often tell people, you know, people can't wait. You would hear about it at family reunions, summer gatherings, like the chosen few, the church gossip. You would hear it everywhere, but you don't, because the vaccine reactions are not as common as some people make it out to be. But it's three shots now for kids as young as 6 months old. And that protection is something that will help protect them as well as other family members in the house.
Doctor, what does it look like now? Because I think we've had this less than 5 year vaccination for kids, less than 5 years, all the way down to about 6 months, as you just mentioned. I'm just wondering about the participation, the parental or the parents bringing in the kids for them to be vaccinated. What does it look like in your neck of the woods?
It varies. I do work mostly, I've been working mostly in communities of color. And so I have found that, in the African-American community, there is a lot more hesitation. And rightly so. We have, you know, the medical community has a history where, you know, not everybody, you know, not all people of color trust the medical community. Just explaining how, you know, this has been tested, how it's been proven effective, how, you know, in the past, you know, we as people of color were kept, away from vaccines. We weren't allowed to get the protection, like the polio shot, you know, we weren't allowed. It went to the other schools, and then the kids of color had to wait on the front lawn to get the polio shot. Some of the listeners may remember. But now, you know, we've made sure that we can be front of line. We can get the necessary protection for our kids and for our families. And then, you know, usually it's one by one. People can bring up what their concerns are and we can talk about it. Because it's so easy for someone just to create a myth, and there are a lot of them out there. So it's hard to really address all of them at once. It's really a matter of just, you know, talking through people's concerns. And the last thing I always say is that as your primary care provider, as your practitioner, we are here to help you make an informed decision. I'm not here to convince you of anything. My job is to help you make an informed medical decision. So I'm not going to pressure you. This isn't some kind of, you know, thing where you have to decide at the end of the visit. But it is important you make an informed decision when it comes to your health, and that's our job.
Well, you know, that's really important, because so many people have a different view of what they think we're trying to do. And we need to let people know that vaccines, as you pointed out, have been out for many, 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 many years. I wanted also to just bring in our other guest, Dr. Peterson. Good morning, Dr. Peterson. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Good morning to you. And thank you again for having me.
Oh, no. We're grateful to be able to do this, because it's important for our communities to understand exactly what's going on. I just want, and maybe both of you could chime in on this if you think it's appropriate, but there are a lot of people who think that, well, I had COVID in the house, and the kids may have had it, or they don't know if they did or not, but they may have gotten tested, may not have gotten tested, but they assume that they just had it. And so we don't need COVID shots, and we don't need vaccines. What do you say to that, those parents?
I think I'll let Dr. Enadike answer that one.
Sure. So, so we have seen a lot of people, And COVID has been really, you've heard that as medical professionals, people have probably heard that it's been difficult. We've seen a lot of suffering from COVID. And so it's been hard to go through, but we've seen a lot of people who did not want to get vaccinated who have passed away. I had a patient of mine who was 20 who spent 3 weeks in the ICU with COVID. But we've seen people who are getting infected more than one time. So it's, you know, people are saying, you know, natural immunity is best. But honestly, if it was, then we really wouldn't have, most of medicine is based on the fact that natural immunity isn't always best. Sometimes the body is a brilliant, brilliant machine, but sometimes it needs a little help. And also as well, we've found that a combination of the infection, having been infected and also receiving the vaccine afterwards, the combination of natural immunity with the vaccinated immunity is even stronger than that. So there are ways, you know, if you're adamant about the strength of natural immunity, but you've already, you know, clearly you've already been sick once or even twice, getting the vaccine as well as additional protection against yourself and, like I said, to your family members who could catch it from you.
Well, that's important because that's what's happening, that family members are catching this from other people in the family. And there are sometimes people resistant to getting other vaccines. Before we go, I want to talk more about the other vaccines that are recommended, but I know that Dr. Peterson has a particular interest in HPV. You want to talk a little bit about that, Dr. Peterson?
Absolutely. So the HPV vaccine is really a cancer prevention vaccine. And kind of connecting that to what Dr. Anadike said with respect to the COVID vaccine, we have seen some overall vaccine hesitancy, in particular hesitancy to receive the HPV vaccine, in part because a huge barrier is that it's not a school-mandated vaccine. So we know that vaccines that are required for school admission have very high rates, so 80%, 90%. But the HPV vaccine is kind of considered optional. And so that is one reason why we're seeing not a significant rates in certain populations. And it's very much connected to cervical cancer in women, oropharyngeal cancer in men and women.
How many of the cancers, the oropharyngeal, that means ones in the mouth and in the back of the throat, mm-hmm. as well as the cervical cancers, are caused by the HPV virus, and how effective is the vaccine in preventing that years later if you get it as a child?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now in the U.S., the vaccine that is available is a nine-valent vaccine. That means it covers nine of the HPV types that are most likely and most associated with cervical cancer and oropharyngeal cancer. In fact, one of the HPV types covered by the vaccine is responsible for over 70% of cervical cancer worldwide, so highly effective. Two of the types covered in the vaccine are most common in oropharyngeal cancer, so highly effective for reducing the effect of this infection and in turn the incidence of these two cancers.
Are there any significant side effects of these vaccines?
So HPV vaccine is, and Dr. Anadike can back me up on this, but HPV vaccine is considered one of the safest vaccines that we have out there. So in terms of side effects, you know, the normal pain, discomfort, but in terms of long-term side effects, there have been nothing significant. And this vaccine has been available, first available for females since 2006. So it's been around quite a long time.
You know, this is so important that we get this information out. Dr. Anadike, what I wanted to ask you, too, is that I was recently involved in a situation where a parent did not want to give their child, I think it was a vaccine to help prevent a problem with a particular kind of infection in their brain or in their head. Mm-hmm. And they were just adamant about not doing it, so much so that it recreated some real issues regarding the parent, the child, and it took a lot of sort of working through this to get the child what the child needed. But some of these vaccines that create some, not the vaccines, but some of these diseases that create problems later on, and that a number of children, and if you could speak just briefly about what are the major vaccines that we are now recommending for children, particularly from newborn up to about 4 or 5 years old, that are critical in your mind?
It sounds like you're talking about meningitis. I mentioned it earlier. I should have been more specific about what it was, but that is actually one of the vaccines that we've seen that has really changed the, especially changed the game for students that are in high school and college, because we had seen a lot of outbreaks in dormitories and in schools beforehand, and having this vaccine has been protection. Has been dramatically effective. Like a lot of these vaccines, sometimes I wonder how parents perceive our excitement about vaccines, because as doctors, we are so excited about vaccines, and it just doesn't seem natural. But the truth is, as practitioners, we've seen, especially as pediatricians, and myself having practiced now about 20 years, I've seen the changes, like for instance, meningitis or even chickenpox, where all these infections have disappeared. Meningitis, or infection around the brain, we do have some vaccines that we give to kids, to young babies, because we used to have a problem much more frequent. It's not completely gone, where even young babies or kids were having meningitis. And we, most medical doctors who are training had experienced where a kid had gotten an infection around the brain. And then afterward, the infection, despite our best treatments, had, brain damage or hearing loss or other problems. And to see that be gone now is just such a blessing, because it devastates these children. There's a number of other infections we prevent against, different types of bacteria that cause blood infections or ear infections, bacteria that cause whooping cough, just horrible infections like that, and also viral infections as well. There's a number of things that we're protecting against now that make it so much easier, because kids are always catching something from each other. So the more we can do to help protect them and just boost their immunity, the better we can. And of course, as I say, boost immunity, I also have to mention making sure they're eating properly and staying healthy. It's not just about vaccines. When it comes to preventive medicine, it's important that you're eating well, you're sleeping well, you're doing what you need to keep your body healthy.
And Dr. Britt probably remembered these days. There used to be a time when kids, I remember distinctly in my family, there's a bunch of us. So one of us got chickenpox, brought it home from wherever we got it from. And all the rest of us got it. And sometimes other parents would send their kids over so they could get it and get it over with. With chickenpox, it was not even thought about being other than just sometimes the scabs and the inconvenience of it all. But no one ever, I don't ever remember anyone getting terribly sick. Of course, my N is very small. It's just the N of maybe 20 people. But we've gone from now just actually encouraging people, some people, encouraging the kids to go in and get these diseases and get them over with. Because do they not get immunity if they do have some of these diseases like chickenpox, or no? Dr. Dequay?
Was that for me?
Yes, go right in.
So we do, part of why we used to get the kids to get each other sick so young is that the younger you are typically with chickenpox, the less side effects you have. As you get older and older, if you do catch chickenpox, you're at risk for, brain infection or other infections and just very severe, problems with the infection. So with some infections, you do have lifelong immunity. And that's great. But for some people, that first infection, just as we saw in COVID, yes, that you get immunity from that first infection if you make it through that first infection. So, for some people, if you're getting infected, you may not make it to the other side. You may not make it to that immunity. Same thing, even with chickenpox, there's people who have gotten chickenpox who've gotten really sick or brain damage or other issues. So it's, it's rare. It's more when you're older that if you catch it and you get those problems. But also, too, you can have other problems later on. If you've had chickenpox as a child, You can then have problems later on as an adult that can affect you. So having to, being able to give somebody a shot with, you know, very few side effects. I mean, just a little bit of pain and redness at the spot is usually what happens, as opposed to the risk of an infection is much better.
And I would add also that there are populations for whom chickenpox is a significant health risk. So our immune suppressed populations have a great risk to drop viruses like chickenpox, the varicella virus.
Let me slip a question in, Dr. Mason, since they brought up immunity again. Can we talk a little bit about, because we don't hear a lot about it, but we know there's passive immunity that the child get from, the newborn gets from the mother, but then there's also passive immunity that the child will get from suckling the breast. And so I'm concerned with, since now we're going down to about 6 months, kids who are taking the vaccine younger than 5 all the way down to 6 months. So some of those kids are breastfeeding. Are there studies being done looking at passive immunity that the child gets from the mother and or gets from suckling the breast? Can one of you, both of you, please comment on that?
Well, I am more familiar with that during the pregnancy, I know that the mothers that were vaccinated had much better outcomes, that because the moms were getting sick during the pregnancy, and then the babies were coming out prematurely. Moms were so sick that they couldn't carry the baby to term. I believe, I would have to double check on that, but I do believe that some immunity is passed through to the baby at birth. And so there is some protection. And then once you hit 6 months, then you have, you know, the vaccine that can protect you from the COVID.
So if I heard you right, some newborns have a lot of complications because the mother had the disease while she was carrying the child. Did I understand you that? Was that your statement?
Right, because that was actually one of the things that came up, because one of the myths going around was that the COVID vaccine was going to affect people's ability to have babies, or was going to cause problems with childbirth, etc. And we found the exact opposite. We were finding that the moms that were vaccinated were better protected against COVID, and therefore were not getting as sick or not getting sick at all when they're having the babies. And the moms that were unvaccinated were having these really bad outcomes with their children, where, you know, in a lot of situations, if they could, they had to deliver the baby just to make sure that, you know, the baby would be okay.
Just for our listeners, I just want to make sure I reintroduce our guest for those of you who are just joining us. We're speaking with Dr. David Adekwe, who is who works with the University of Illinois and Advocate Illinois Masonic Hospital. And he got his degree from Meharry Medical College and did his pediatric residency, or his training in pediatrics, at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And he also was involved with some citywide programs where he did his work and research. And his field of family and childhood, talking about families and childhood on mentoring, advocacy, and the outreach work, which is what you've heard come through in some of the things that you've said. And of course, we also have other guests that's on today. She is an assistant professor of epidemiology in the Division of Epidemiology at the University of Illinois School of Public Health. And she has also been doing some work in the development programs and trained as an epidemiologist. And I'm going to ask her to explain what that is. I know what it is, but I want her to explain what it is. And her expertise is in implementation. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So an epidemiologist looks at disease at the population level. So while Dr. Adekwe and colleagues would focus on an individual patient, an epidemiologist looks at trends in disease, emerging diseases, on a scale at the population level. So we do a lot in terms of statistics. We do a lot of measuring, determining populations that are more susceptible or less susceptible to diseases of interest. And my focus is in HPV-related cancers, so principally cervical cancer. And so that's my interest in thinking about the vaccine, because it's a what we call a primary prevention for cervical cancer. And cervical cancer is something that is not as common as, say, breast cancer or prostate cancer, but it is the second leading cause of cancer death in young women, women who are 20 to 39. And importantly, in the U.S., it disproportionately affects women of color and women living in poverty. So it is a cancer that also has a very effective secondary prevention. That is, once precancer or cancer is detected, we have really good way of screening for that, identifying early cases and treating. And yet we have pockets, even in the city of Chicago, we have pockets of populations with very high new cancer cases, cervical cancer cases. So when we look at it, the whole U.S. population, it doesn't necessarily, that is, cervical cancer doesn't rate among the top 10. But when we look at particular populations, it is an important cancer to eradicate.
Our phone number here is 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. That you can call in with your questions for either Dr. Decaway or Dr. Peterson. We'll be on the air for a little bit longer, and we want to make sure that we get your questions. So please call in if you have questions for either of our guests. I did want to ask another question about someone did submit a question saying that their child missed their second shot for HPV. I assume that's what they're talking about, but maybe not. And they want to know, can they just go in and get it, or do they have to start over again?
No. There's the timing around second shot, and the number of doses really depends on the age of the child. So they can certainly, if they're beyond the deadline, they could certainly go in for vaccination. And as you pointed out, Dr. Mason, this is, we're coming up upon prime vaccination season as children are getting ready to go back to school. And while the HPV vaccine is not mandated for school entry, it certainly could be part of the barrage of vaccines that children are getting. So absolutely encourage your caller to talk to their provider, their healthcare provider, about getting that second dose.
When, this is Dr. Britt, when is the optimal time to start vaccinations to prevent or limit HPV infections?
So the recommendation is to start children between 11 and 12, although we have some populations that may start as young as 9, and it can go all the way up actually to the age of 45, late vaccination. But the ideal time is to vaccinate the child before sexual debut, for sexual activity. And both males and females. There's no difference in terms of recommendation based on male or female.
Thank you.
And so the men are, the boys are being encouraged to get vaccinated as well for
Absolutely. HPV? Yep. Absolutely, both in terms of prevention of oropharyngeal cancer and other cancers that males get, but also in terms of protecting future partners.
Dr. Decaway, what are some of the things I know you're seeing? We talked a little bit about hesitancy earlier today. What would be the major stumbling blocks that you see that prevent vaccinations that maybe we could try and clear up or begin to just address a little bit here on the show before we go out of time?
Sure. Well, especially when it comes to the HPV vaccine, we do see that a lot of people are concerned that because there is there tends to be a strong sexual contact message from that with the vaccine, that the parents want to avoid that because they feel it's going to encourage sexual activity. And, research has shown that's not true. In fact, from my experience, it's been the opposite. The patients that are looking for the vaccines are the ones that are more into preventative medicine, who are actually trying to prevent things. And they're not, one of the best ways to prevent it is is by avoiding sex. A lot of my patients who actually aren't having sex are the ones who are asking for it, first off, for prevention. But it's just like, you know, seatbelts won't encourage people to have reckless driving. This vaccine won't encourage sexual activity. Also, another thing is that a lot of people think that, you know, HPV is only from sex. And so all I need to prevent HPV is a condom and I'm good. And as we've talked, you know, HPV affects more than just the sexual regions. You can get it in the mouth, you can get it in the skin, you can get it in all different areas, and that can be then transmitted from skin-on-skin contact. So, you know, while a condom is great for protecting you from a number of things, the best way to protect yourself from HPV and potential types of cancer, and this is a male and female, is, you know, to be vaccinated. And in the same vein, a lot of people say, oh, I'm not having a lot of sex. I'm not a woman. A lot of people think, you know, you have to, only women get it because of the cervical cancer thing. No, if 80% of people will get HPV at some point in their lives. So, you know, to have that protection to get that immunity through the vaccine is much more beneficial because it is a virus. You can't just take an antibiotic to cure it. All we can do is monitor you and watch out for cancer and make sure it doesn't develop.
Yeah, we had a show, last month, talking about HPV, some of the cancers, and some of the disfiguring surgeries that women had to undergo to deal with it. We've got a couple of callers on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take our caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go with your question. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'll try to get right to the point. This is specifically for the doctor dealing with the epidemics in terms of population. And so, and I want to start off by saying this. Last weekend, and just stay with me for a minute and I'll throw it back at you. Trump had a rally, and he had a rally in Illinois. And he had a speaker, Mary Miller, who did win, I believe. And she made a comment, thank you, Trump, for saving white lives. So with that being said, there was a concern about depopulation. And so this whole issue with abortion, and I do believe that there is a underlining issue of depopulation. And so with that being said, I'm going to throw this question back at you, is that do you think there is an agenda to specifically deal with that issue of population control, depopulation? Is that still an agenda that's possible? Because we know historically that's been a issue or it's been a subject directed to black people. Is it possible that it still exists today, that agenda of population control and depopulation?
Well, first of all, that's not the topic we're talking about today. I think that's a great topic to explore. And I think what we'll do is get some guests who have done some work in that area to talk about that. So I thank you for the question, and we won't be able to answer it today. I want to go ahead to our second caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead. Okay, I guess that caller. Hello, are you there?
No, this is Dr. Andy Gash. I would like to actually say something about that. A lot of the times, when it comes to these sort of topics, a lot of the things, like even when it came to COVID, a lot of the things that come up is that a lot of the things that are depopulating us are things that we can prevent. So one of the reasons that we're talking about vaccines and stuff like that is there are things that we can do because we do die from cervical cancer at twice the rate of other populations. That's just cervical cancer. We are dying at much higher rates for almost across the spectrum. Because we need to, preventive medicine is extremely important. We shouldn't just come to the doctor when we're sick, hoping to get a cure. We need to take our health seriously. We need to make sure that preventive medicine is top of mind for everyone. And even if you don't have health insurance or you don't have a means to get to a doctor that you're aware of, there's a lot of federally qualified health centers that can make sure that your health needs are taken care of. The county has places. When it comes to getting the vaccine, for example, I mean, there's a lot of programs in place that allow you to get these vaccines free of charge to make sure you are protected so that your life is, because your life is valuable, your family's life is valuable. You need, you know, it's important that we do what we can to protect it.
You know, no, and if I could just build on that a bit, when we think about cervical cancer, we have a quarter of Chicago's 77 community areas that have new cancer case rates, or what we call incidence, that are more than twice the national average. And so these are communities that are Black and brown communities, low-income communities. These are communities that we really need to work closely with in order to understand what are the barriers to prevention, what are some of the ways in which we can engage men and women in treatment. I'm working with my colleagues at UI Health, Drs. McLaughlin and Thon. We're starting a study to address these high cervical cancer incidence mortality regions, in particular to engage the communities and involve the communities in the development of an innovative and holistic approach to care for cervical cancer patients, from all the way from early diagnosis to treatment to survivorship to involve their loved ones. And so I think the key here is to identify and describe the communities that are struggling and then engage with those communities to find solutions.
We've got another caller on the line. You want to go ahead? We'll take that caller now.
Hello? Hello, Terry?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi, this is Dr. Rayner. This is Dr. Goose.
Hey, Dr. Rayner. You got your two colleagues are on the phone. Hey, Dr. Britt and myself. Go right ahead.
I'm always happy to get together with my U of I brethren. and then my 100 Black man brethren, David. David, hello, David. How are you?
How are you doing, Dr. Rayner? Good to hear from you.
I'm doing okay. It's so important. I mean, Terry, we're that generation where I'm looking at diseases now that, as I was ending my clinical career, that I don't see now. This generation will never see the diseases that we saw when we were in medical school coming out. But what's happened is, you know, we tripled the amount of vaccines that have come out since I first started practicing in 1980 when I was in medical school. I mean, I went to medical school in 1976. So, and what's happened is the biggest problem is vaccine resistance. I saw more during my last part of my practice before I finished practicing in the early part of 2021. The biggest problem I was having was with the younger people, who were the only ones that we were allowing to come to office, was more vaccine resistance. So I knew it was going to be tough when the COVID vaccine came out. So I think we have to continue to do what we're doing right now and just continue to push the importance of these vaccines. So, I mean, it's always great, Terry, that you're always doing forums, giving these forums of information to our people. And because it's so important, because without the knowledge, they're just not going to know. And it was very disappointing as I was leaving practice and seeing I probably saw more vaccine resistance in that last year than I ever saw before. So we have to just keep doing what we're doing in terms of getting the information out and just letting people know that these vaccines are safe and they're important. So thanks, Terry, for what you're doing. And David, who's still on the front line, and Dr. Peterson, too, really appreciate what you're doing. And let's keep doing it. Thanks.
Deuce, it's so Thank glad you. To hear from you. I do have a question. Maybe you can weigh in as well. Can we talk a little, because there's a new virus on the scene now. Can we talk a little bit about monkeypox without causing undue alarm? So either of my colleagues from UIC, we can start with Deuce, we can start with Dr. Peterson, we can start with Dr. Idegwe. Can you talk a little bit about monkeypox?
Well, yeah, we are starting to see it spreading across the country, and we are starting to get a little bit more familiar with it. We've had some cases now in Chicago. It's still pretty rare. We are seeing some people with these lesions, these circular lesions. I'm trying to think of a good way to describe it, but you do see these circular lesions, and some people as well are having like fever and chills and swollen glands as well. And so they can be in different areas of the body. But if you are seeing unusual spots on your body or something different, especially if you're having those symptoms as well, you need to contact your doctor and let them know.
Well, what do they do? I mean, what can you do about monkeypox? So what do they? How do they treat it?
I'm sorry. Did you want to answer something, Dr. Patterson?
Oh, I was simply going to say that what's interesting about monkeypox is it's often spoken in parallel to COVID. And the good news, if there is news around a virus, is that monkeypox is not a novel virus. It has been in low and middle income countries, African countries, Latin American countries for quite some time. And so there is, we know its pattern. We know how to treat it. And so while it's concerning that it's moved from other continents to North America, it's not like COVID in the sense that that virus was brand new to humans. And so we, you know, there was so much we didn't know about it. And we do know how to treat monkeypox. And to Dr. Enadike's point, it's important to, if you have something that's suspicious, to go see your provider and get treatment.
Now, are these treatments other injections, medications, or is it hospitalization required? What is the what's the story for monkeypox?
To your first question, actually, which I didn't get to, for prevention, it is mostly from skin-to-skin contact. So, it's not that easy to get it spread unless you're having skin-to-skin contact with someone who is infected. But most people will resolve or get better on their own without, you know, needing an antiviral or any sort of other medication. If they are offering a vaccine to some people who have been exposed just to prevent them from, progression of the disease. But for the most part, you know, unless you're having a major reaction, most people, you know, you just have to isolate and that's the treatment that we're doing at this point.
And isolation and doing anything else?
There's some level of contact tracing, so understanding those people that you've been exposed to so that prevention can possibly be given.
And to what medication or what injection or what is that process for that?
For the contact tracing would be potentially
vaccination. No, not the contact tracing, but are people vaccinated post-exposure? How does this work?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
Yes.
So after somebody's been exposed to it, then they should see their doctor. And while we're talking about that as we wind down, what I would like both of you to tell the listeners where you are and how they can get an appointment with a pediatrician at the University of Illinois through the FQHC at the University of Illinois or directly through a pediatric clinic. What do they need to do if they want to do that?
I can start. We have the Mile Square, the USC Mile Square clinics are all federally qualified healthcare health centers. So you can get, they're there to make sure that, you know, regardless of your ability to pay, that you can get the treatment you need. We actually have centers right now in downtown, South Shore, Englewood, Humboldt Park, Cicero, and actually in a month there will be a new one opening up in Auburn Gresham. And so we're very excited about the new clinic in Auburn Gresham. And there they're actually going to have, if I may let everybody know, they're going to have a dentist there and pediatric dentist there. They're going to have pediatricians, myself, women's health services, behavioral health, and addiction services. One of the big things I want to mention about this place, like the other Mile Square clinics, is, and we haven't really, it's off topic for today, but they do have a number of behavioral health services so that people can get same day treatment for any sort of behavioral health if you're having. They can see a counselor or see somebody within a half hour, an hour if they need to. And that's something that the community has been really asking for. And so we're excited to bring that to Auburn Gresham. But any federally qualified health center would be able to give you the HPV vaccine or make sure you get the preventive care health care that you require, that you need to stay healthy.
Well, we want to thank you both for being on the show, and we're probably going to have you back because we went through a lot of information. And thank Dr. Rayner for calling in. Thank you, Dr. Britt and Ms. Mashima Britt for making sure that we have coverage across the country with making certain that people tune in to hear what we're talking about. We want to remind everybody that our open house is going to be on July 9th at 1975 Joe Orr Road in Linwood, Illinois, from 11 until 2 o'clock. It's free. Just come on by. Want to make sure that you get a chance to check it out. And we want to make certain that you do. And if you want to call in and if you want to try and get, and I think we're probably out of time now for the other things I want to do. I just wanted to give the number real quick.
But I got it. I got it, Jerry.
Okay, real quick. Go ahead.
708-816-1132. 708-816-1132. That's a 24-hour number. Call it.
All right. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate everybody tuning in today. And we look forward to seeing you this time, same station, same time next week. Until then, be blessed. What's my purpose?